Thank you for listening to an audio recording from the Midwest Genealogy Center's Tell Me a Story program, an initiative dedicated to preserving America's history through the timeless practice of oral storytelling. To learn more about the Tell Me a Story program, including how you can add your own story to the collection, visit MidwestGenealogyCenter.org/tellmeastory. On behalf of the Midwest Genealogy Center and Mid-Continent Public Library, we hope you enjoy the following story.
My name is Kathy Smith, and I'm here today on the Baseball Project speaking with Ed Fitzgerald and his beautiful wife. And Ed's going to speak with us right now and tell us how he got started in T-ball.
It started in 1976. My son was 6 years old. And I started coaching with Cliff Howard. Cliff started coaching the T-ball team. So we coached together for 2 or 3 years, and then I started coaching on my own about 3 years after that. And I went ahead and coached till 1987. So I live. It seemed like up at Lee McKeegan there were 4 ball diamonds, and everybody knew everybody. We knew every kid in the ballpark, how good they were, who we wanted for next year, and to try to get the teams together. And it was quite a good group of coaches and kids, because we just had a good time with it. And my wife ran the concession stand so we could get the ice cream cones and the hot dogs, and we kind of lived on that stuff for about 10 years. I have a lot of good memories, a lot of good coaches up there. We had some great sponsors over the years, some of the same ones every year, and then we got a few new ones. The head guy back when I was running was John O'Brien. John was the president of the board, and he kept the fields up. We made practice fields all over town. If he could get a piece of ground somewhere, he would go out and put a little backstop up, and he wanted you to work every Saturday on a ball diamond. You never got a Saturday off. He wanted you to work somewhere. And John was really the back behind the whole thing. He kept it going all those years and kept coaches in line. We never had much problem with coaches. Once in a while, we'd get a little bit, but nothing like there is today. Everybody just really got along good and treated the kids good. I don't remember very many instances at all where somebody really got upset over something, maybe just some little thing, but it was nothing major. What was the guy's name?
Tell him about your experience with the T-ball and the kid that got in the backstop.
Oh, I was in Mustang, I think. They were about 9 and 10 years old, and I was waiting. Looking for one of my kids to come up to bat. It was his turn to bat, and nobody could find him, and he kept looking for him, hollering for him, and turned around, and he was up on top of the backstop, climbed up there. He really didn't want to be there. He just didn't want to be there.
And Sarah.
And I had a little girl on one of the young first teams, and she was playing third base one night, and I was down there talking to her, and I said, she was really upset. She just really bored, and I said, Sarah, why are you out here? And she says, my mother wants me to be. So she was on our team a couple of years. We had, I can't remember her last name, Sarah something, but anyway.
So you had mixed that boys and girls on
your
teams?
We had a few girls, not very many. When we first started, I don't know that they had softball then, organized softball. We had a few girls in there, but not very many. And then I think softball must have started somewhere in there, so they gave, they played over there. But we didn't make any difference to us. If some girl went out to tryouts and we won, everybody made a team. Nobody got left out. If you had more kids, you made another team. You looked for another coach and you made another team. And so every kid that wanted to play got to play somewhere.
So in the community, so you would network, you'd form a network of contacts in the community. I mean, how did you go about doing that? Just word of mouth or advertise, or how did you do that?
For what?
To get coaches.
You just recruited.
Your friends and things.
And if some kid wanted to play, maybe a new kid moved into town, he wanted to play ball, we'd go to his dad and say, you want to coach? We just recruited coaches the best we could. You get on a telephone, does anybody know anybody? And sometimes a guy that was helping coach in another team, he would come up, maybe move up to be a head coach. And sometimes they really weren't too hard to find. I mean, we treated everybody good. We gave them all equipment. We had an equipment shed over there, and when the coach would come in, we'd bring them over, and we'd give them all the batting helmets, baseballs, and everything they needed to run a team, catcher stuff.
And that was thanks to the sponsors, because their sponsor fees was paid for all of their equipment.
Sure. And where did everybody buy their baseball gloves back in those days?
And they had their own glove. I don't know. We furnished catcher's mitts.
Yeah.
I remember that, but everybody had their own.
So if you were shopping for a baseball mitt, where would you go?
I'm sorry?
If you were shopping for a baseball mitt back then, where would you take your kid?
I don't remember.
Because there weren't that many.
There wasn't a Dick's Sporting Goods, and there wasn't a...
I don't remember.
Academy. Isn't that funny?
Academy.
Would they have gone over to, I know, in Grandview, there was...
TGNY? There was a TG&Y.
Yeah. Would they have had gloves and things? I guess they would have, because they had everything in there,
yeah.
I imagine.
But I think we might have went to Independence Center. There was something over there, or Blue Ridge Mall.
True. Okay.
Sporting goods stores.
Okay.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. My dad was buying sporting equipment for my brothers. He always wanted them to have the best baseball mitts. He felt that was really an important thing. So back then there was Gateway Sporting Goods and then Bunting in downtown Kansas City.
Yeah, I don't remember what was out here. I do one thing I have to laugh about. You could play a baseball game, and the kids might be not angry with each other. They might have beat somebody or something, and you know. But the big thing up there between games or after games was cup ball, and those kids would get together and wad up an old cup. And they would pitch and hit it with their hands and run bases, and there'd be 10 or 20 kids out in a cup ball game going. Nobody cared about
anything. Well, all the rest of the games are going on.
All the rest of the games are going on, and they're all out there playing. They call it cup
ball.
Oh, that's
pretty cool.
And but the town was just the right size, because everybody kind of knew everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it kept growing as it got, you know, as it got older, but we kind of kept up with them.
The hard part came as it got bigger. The guys had finding room to squeeze all the games in that small park.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and then they did the
across
the street.
They did a park across the street where the skateboard thing is, and there's something else over there now. But they had two or three ball diamonds over there. They called it John O'Brien Park because John made it.
Okay.
He did it himself. You know, he got with the Parks Recreation, got it. We built the diamonds and the backstops and stuff. But that was six diamonds, and then it was full. Then when I quit, I was on the board about three or four years after I kept coaching, and we just were running out of room, and it got bigger and bigger. And
so, how was the Lee Summit Baseball Association founded? Who started that?
John O'Brien,
John?
I think, started
okay.
John and. Tom Schultz.
Might have been Tom.
And then there were some other guys. I don't remember who.
Bobby
Luther.
Bobby Mack was probably in there in the middle of all that.
And it was Colt League Baseball. Pony League Baseball was the book, the rules we went by. There were two or three different rules or different sections you could be in, and we were under pony baseball rules, and that's what we went by. And it started out, you know, we had certain rules at t-ball, you could do this, coaches pitch, so on. A certain age for it was t-ball, pinto, mustang, bronco, pony, and colt, and that was the different age groups. And each kid was like in mustang 2 years. It was 9 to 12 or 11 or something. Yeah. But each kid was in a group for 2 years, and we went by the pony rule. And at the end of the season, about August, they would pick tournament teams, and they would play in the pony baseball tournament. And you'd play like St. Joe and Excelsior Springs and Blue Springs and Independence. And
what formed those tournament teams?
Huh?
What formed those tournament teams?
You picked the kids. The kids got picked by the managers of the whole league, of like the whole Mustang League. The manager would get together and pick kids.
Based on the coaches
and
recommendations.
Who was the best players out of their teams. And you always wanted to get somebody from every team. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, as fair as we could be about it. It wasn't any, because one guy had a good team, all his kids got on that. So it worked out pretty good.
It was an honor to be picked.
Oh, sure.
And I think they did a pretty good job of always having two kids from every team.
Yeah, we tried. Yeah. We really tried. So.
At the games, who kept score? Was there an adult male keeping score? Or?
Right, you had each team picked a scorekeeper. Yeah,
she usually kept score for us.
And I think the home team, I believe, had the official scorekeeper, right? Mm-hmm. And they kept track of pitches because the pitcher could only pitch so many pitches in a game. And it was... Somebody kept track of the pitches, and when he got to that number, he had to change pitches because he could only throw so many pitches.
So usually the coach's wife was the scorekeeper.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was always a dynamic duo then.
I remember we didn't have official scoreboards up at the ballpark, somewhere along the line, we did some wheeling and dealing with Coca-Cola, I think it was, and they... came up with some scoreboards, so we put up the poles, we put up the scoreboards, we ran electrical to them, and that was a big thing.
I bet it was.
Electric scoreboards. So,
talk about you had a gathering in early spring where kids came.
Oh yeah, early spring you'd have what we call Player Acquaintance Day. So every say you had a Mustang team. The team you had the first year, you kept your first year kids moved up with you the second year, but your second year kids moved on. So you went to Player Acquaintance Day. Every league from Pinto up through the Colt, you picked players. And the players would go out, they'd throw, they'd hit, they'd run, and catch balls and all that, and you'd evaluate them. And then they'd have a draft. You whoever you wanted, and you go around and every league you go through there, and you'd have a draft, and you'd try to draft who you wanted. And if somebody pick a kid, we didn't do any trading. You couldn't trade kids back then, but that's the way every kid got picked. So everybody got to play. By the end of the draft, every kid that came out to Player Acquaintance Day got on a team.
And it was kind of an interesting thing to see how serious these guys would get.
I bet.
Standing back and not being a coach, I remember being there and we'd serve refreshments to the guys and stuff, and they were, I mean, they had their heads down and they were going through lists, and so-and-so picked something, that blew that one, got to go over here. I mean, it was a pretty involved thing.
So do you think that they formed those lists by the games their team played against another team? I mean, they were...
Right, the kids that moved up, actually, it was funny, there was probably about 6 or 8 or 10 of us that coached from 6 to 16, and we knew every kid in the ballpark. We knew we knew his talent. We used to go up when we coached, and we knew a kid was coming up, we'd go down and watch him play, and everybody knew who they wanted, mm-hmm. tried to get them anyway. So, but
it was more than a volunteer thing. It was, I don't want to say more than a hobby, but these guys were so involved. They took it so to heart to get those kids on that field and hope to give them some wins. And I remember one time Ed had a team that won, what, one or two games all year. And the next year, the same kids came back and made and won the championship of that division. Oh, it was like, how do you do that? How do you keep them, you know, going? But those kids just honored them so well because they just meant so much to them. Mm-hmm. It was really
do you
awesome.
Think they practiced in their off time? I mean, I know you probably had regular practices, but
we had practice a couple of days a week, and you might be out in a grassy field somewhere. You might be lucky enough to have a diamond somewhere. I mean, all over town, we had fields. Like I said, John, we go out and build a baseball field. He'd drag the grass off, and we'd practice all over. That was.
And you hope that the kids practice at home too, like she's saying. You hope they did, but not always.
The really hard part was like when we had all this rain in the last couple, 3 weeks. I remember being what they called a league rep, and you had to schedule the games for your league. And you take a weekend, it'd be Saturday morning. We started at 8 o'clock or 10 o'clock, and we played till 11 o'clock at night. So if you lose a Saturday and you lose a Sunday afternoon games, you have to make all those up. But rain again and rain again and rain again, and that was the hard part. You're trying to make up those games because you want everybody to play, you know, the games they had coming. Mm-hmm. So,
The devotion, you probably picked this up from everybody you've talked to, mm-hmm. The devotion to that was amazing. I mean, these guys worked all day. Ed worked construction. He's tired. They all were tired. Cliff, when he coached, he was, what was he? Oh, he was a delivery man for a grocery company. I won't say the name, but I mean, he started at 4 in the morning, and he was there that evening coaching those kids till, if the game took till 11, 12 o'clock, we were there till 11 or 12 o'clock, and they'd get up and go to work the next day. It was just,
oh, yes. I know, I can see that. Yeah. Yeah, I can feel that. I can really feel it. That's very strong. It's a testament for all of the guys that volunteered their time.
My son worked for John. He'd mow fields. And they had a mower, and so they'd mow all the ball diamonds and all the practice fields every week. So my son, a few years in there, worked for John. He'd go out and he'd mow the practice fields and mow the fields up there, and he'd drag all the ball diamonds, all four ball diamonds at Lee McKeegan, and then he'd lay them all out with the chalk lines and the batter's boxes and do all that on the four fields. That's me.
Oh.
So, anyway, we all had a family. We were all in it together.
Of course. So, I think it's wonderful. It really is.
But he's, you know, he passes kids on the street today. Now, they're 40-some years old. He coached them when they were 10 or 12. And he recognized them, like, how would you even know who they were? And they talk, and they're so excited that he recognized them, you know, and it's just amazing.
That's what I've heard. I have two friends that their dad coached. They didn't—they played, but he started coaching before they were even old enough. He liked the sport, they told me that they've been with their dad, and some guys will come up and say, how you doing, coach? I mean, they still call him coach.
Yeah.
And then they're just, they always thank him for the inspiration that he gave them and everything. So that's kind of what got the wheels turning, and, of course, my dad.
Sure.
So I thought, man, we've got to record all this. We've got to preserve these stories and these names and all that kind of stuff for our history.
It was a good time. You know, I know the challenges that they're against now, as big as the town is, that out at Legacy, you try to schedule, but the town is so big. I mean, it's really a hard thing to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have the, I mean, I'm sure there's some camaraderie out there, but it's nothing like, because you don't know everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you go play and, you know, they know the different teams and stuff, but there's just a lot of them. And it just changed the whole thing.
How many teams were in those leagues? Do you know offhand?
Oh.
Wow. That's a really good question.
They ran down as they got older, the number of teams in each league. I would say the 16-year-olds at the end, we probably only had two or three teams. And then it worked its way down, maybe 8, 10, and the littler kids there were more. And I know at the end, when I was still on the board, we had so many younger kids playing, it was really a struggle to find places for them to play.
Sure.
Because they got so many. And I don't know how long after I got off the board when Legacy was built, or what they did after that. I know they struggled to find places because they always wanted everybody that wanted to play to get to play.
Sure.
And
Then
we had the payment thing. They paid so much to play, and it got them a pair of pants and a shirt and all that stuff. But if they had, I think it was two kids or over two kids, they didn't have to pay. And if somebody really struggled, then we took care of it. So.
Yeah, never let
nobody
anybody
ever.
Go. Yeah.
Couldn't play because they didn't have the money. Mm-hmm. So took care of that too.
I wonder if it's like that now.
I remember that there Ed had some, and I'm sure all your other coaches had too, had some kids who either did not have, unfortunately, a father figure at home.
Mm-hmm.
Single mom raising kids, and sometimes mom was so busy or whatever, all she could do was get her child to the ballpark, and he'd hop out of the car and she'd leave. And so she never got to see him play much. And we had a few of those, like, oh, if you could just stay and see how excited they are, you know, mm-hmm. And when they do well, they're so proud of themselves. But anyway,
so, yeah, sometimes that happens.
That's just the way life was, but they got at least what they got. They got leadership at the ballpark.
That's right. And that
had to mean a lot to them.
That's exactly
right. You learn
right.
to lose
mm-hmm.
gracefully, mm-hmm. and you learn to win humbly.
And that's what life's all about, isn't it?
Yes. And that was one thing Ed always made sure his kids didn't taunt after the game. If they won a big game or anything, you celebrated, but you did not taunt, and everybody was friends afterwards, and that's it.
So when they got through all of those, and I can't remember all the pony and all that different levels,
yeah.
So the older kids, so after that, what league did those kids play in? Did they go on up to 3 and 2, or was there American Legion?
Some of the kids in town went to 3 and 2.
Was there an American
Legion? There was a Legion team after we finished Colt. I think there was an American Legion team. And then, some of them went to 3 and 2. Some of them played high school baseball. And it just kind of got spread out after that. But like I said, the teams dwindled down. As they got older, you didn't have that many ball teams.
Mm-hmm.
So we played Blue Springs. And the older kids, we played Blue Springs and Independence and some of those teams too. So.
And so then I expect that whoever the board members were the ones that were calling the different towns to organize these games.
Right.
I mean, that would be like
kind
a major
job
on its own to organize all that, keep up with it.
Blue Springs had three or four teams in the age group that I usually coach. They had three or four teams in there. So I remember one of the teams, all the Royals players' kids played on.
Oh my gosh.
If you watch real close, if there wasn't a game, if you watch real close, the Royals players would be sitting around in lawn chairs, kind of hiding out.
How fun.
So they could watch their kids play ball and nobody bother them.
That is really cool.
But they didn't always win.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It's like, oh my God. Yeah, that would be kind of scary for
it
a
fun.
Kid.
So,
that was neat.
Yeah.
And then, so in terms of the concession stand, how was that funded? I mean, was that self-funding? I mean, when they payment for the hot dogs and that went into a treasury, and then you went out and bought more?
Yeah,
and
it kind of ran itself. She yeah. ran that for several times.
Well, I didn't run it. I mean, I served
right.
in it.
They had a board.
We had a board. Yeah, we had a booster board.
And booster board.
All of moms, and we recruited heavily and begged, and that was harder to get than coaches. But yes, it was self-sustaining and profit-making, because what we make, we help buy equipment for the teams.
And the kids would work in the concession stand, right?
Yes, we hired teenagers, and they got paid minimally, but it was a good experience for them. If they weren't old enough to get a job, you know, they might be 13 or 14 years old or whatever, they'd help out making ice cream cones and whatever. And it was really, we were almost like a sorority. the women were. But I shudder to tell you that when we first started, you would, at the end of the night, the ballpark lights went out. We're putting all the equipment away, wiping down the ice cream machine and the popcorn machine. The guys are waiting for us and pacing back and forth, and we're hurrying around. And all the money went in a bag, and whoever was in charge that night, you took turns being in charge of the stand, took the money bag home. You took it home.
Oh, my gosh.
And you counted it, and then you took it to the bank the next day.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my gosh. And then finally it was like, okay, we need two people counting this. And then pretty soon it was like, this isn't getting it. There's got to be something. I forget. So now then we started putting it in a bag, and somebody, two of us, one would follow it in the car, and we would drop it in the drop.
Yeah,
and
do the drop. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's how it started. It was just an innocent thing.
Yeah, a trust thing too.
Yeah, and we didn't need to worry about it. You mm-hmm. know, it was okay. But yeah, that ballpark would be dark. Those ladies that still be in there.
Yeah, one thing about Lee McKeegan, at 11 o'clock, the lights went out.
Yeah, that was the rule.
That was the rule of the town and everything. If you were playing baseball, you wanted to be done by 11, because 11 o'clock, the lights went out.
I mean, so that was a city policy?
It was a city park. And yes. We had
well, that didn't disturb any residents.
Yeah.
Especially down Douglas there.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, so that was kind of, I forgot about that.
Oh, my gosh. That'd be awful. So then what would you do?
We tried to get an inning done, and if you couldn't, you just...
Everybody out with flashlights?
Yeah.
So tell me some of the names of the women who were helping you, the boosters.
Donna Luther was a big organizer, and her husband, Lee Luther, was kind of the manpower behind the stand. When we needed things fixed, we called Lee, and he'd come in, and pretty much he was a handyman and could fix anything. It was Bobby Mack, and boy, you're really pulling on my brain now. Phyllis Howard. Jan Gladville, I think it was. She was a hard worker. I'd have to think some more about that.
Okay, that's all right.
Yeah.
We can always add to it.
Gail Harden?
I don't remember Gail being up there. That was more basketball. I have to think about
okay,
that some
okay, that's
more.
Okay. So did some of the local stores help donate hot dogs and buns and all that kind of stuff? Did they ever do that?
Not very often.
Okay.
We pretty much traveled to the warehouse boxes,
okay.
box stores, and came out with big carts full of candy bars. And we went to Fritz's Meat was our sausage.
Okay.
And everybody loved them. And when we rode out of them, they were very unhappy. So we had hot dogs and Fritz's sausage. And the buns we got from Cliff Howard, because he worked for a bread company. And he was a coach. And he would get us a good deal. But we bought hundreds and hundreds of buns would be stacked up. We bought 5 and 10 pound bags of popcorn and the oil, the big 5 gallon drums of that nasty orange oil. But it made it taste so good.
Of course.
And then the ice cream came from a dairy company that they would deliver. They told us what days they deliver, and we'd always have to have somebody up there at the concession stand, even on a weekday, to open it up and let the dairy company come in. And it was ice cream mixed in milk cartons. And we put it in the machine, and then by that evening when we got ready to do it, it would be self-serve, mm-hmm. or sauce serve, I mean. Ice cream cones came from Sam's. The candy was incredible. We pushed candy out that window like unbelievable. Bubble gum.
Everything was really cheap.
And every kid got some tokens usually at the end of a game from their coaches. And they'd come up and use those tokens.
Oh, that was a wonderful idea.
What can I get you? And the little tiny head would come up above the window
oh.
and say, "How about what can I get for these many tokens?" And, well, you can get this, this, and this. Oh, is that all? Or, okay, you know, it was so cute. That was an exciting time. Take those tokens up there. And parents would buy them for the team instead of like a refreshment afterwards or whatever. So that was cool. That was cool. But
yeah, that token is a great idea, yeah.
Did we do pizza? Did we start getting pizza?
Well,
seemed like we start getting pizza, but that doesn't matter. It was hot dogs, sausages, and ice cream cones and popcorn. That was the huge, huge selling items. And you reaped of that smell from the popcorn and the hot dogs and all that. You just came home, you're like, ah! And it was not a very good diet, but we lived on it many nights.
Hot dog was cooked with a dollar, I think.
If you didn't have a game, if Ed didn't have a game, we just went up to the ballpark. That's where everybody was. That's where fun. You saw your friends, and it was cool, you know. It was great.
So were there bleachers, or did people have to bring lawn chairs?
They had both. Mostly, they had pretty good bleachers back then.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
Yeah.
Quite a few.
They were very nice. Some people brought lawn chairs, but...
Yeah, not very many.
I remember one time getting a heat stroke sitting on those bleachers.
Oh, my gosh.
I took an umbrella for the sun and took a black umbrella like a
dummy. Oh, my gosh.
And had it close down on my head where I wasn't getting any air, and all of a sudden my arms went numb. But we were I was watching a game, and... Yeah, it was.
And then restroom facilities, what did they have?
Mm-hmm. They just...
Porta-potty things or...
No, they had a big restroom at the concession stand.
Oh, great.
Big,
okay.
It was really nice.
And I don't remember who cleaned it.
That's what I was just going to ask, who was responsible for that.
I don't know.
Probably
we paid somebody. I can't remember if we paid somebody to do that or whether the Parks Department might have... Maybe the Parks Department graciously supplied somebody to do that.
Did they charge rental on the diamonds and stuff back then?
Oh.
You what?
Did we
rental
pay?
On the diamonds? Did the baseball association?
No, we took care of them. I don't remember paying anything.
Okay.
No.
I don't remember paying anything.
No, because and then we took over the upkeep, so that was more
we
like
mowed them and
payment.
Drug the fields and lined the fields and did all that. So.
And so then you had storage sheds out there to keep that equipment in that you okay.
Big storage shed. It was across the street.
Okay.
They had batting cages across the street.
Oh, okay.
Yes, that's
well,
right.
Well, we built those.
Yeah, and then that was where the storage shed was, and that's where they kept there was a little garage that kept the tractor in. John O'Brien made a deal, figured out how to buy a tractor, and then he bought the drag thing to drag the field, so they were pretty professional.
Oh, yeah. Like he really had it all together. I mean, what was his background that he wanted to do that? I mean, had he lived here his whole life, or do you know?
He worked at AT&T, or it was Western Electric at the time. He worked there. I don't know how he got started.
I don't know.
He was known as Mr. Baseball, at least something. Everybody knew him.
He was a very generous person.
Yeah.
Very generous with his time and his resources. And
is everything. He still around?
No, he passed away.
It's been several years.
Back before I quit cooking. I was still on the board, I think. Quite a while.
Do you think his wife is still around?
Luann, I don't know. His son, is that his son or his stepson? Chuck.
Chuck Chambers. He coached up there, too.
So that, I
Chuck
don't know.
Chuck would be a good one to talk
to. I don't know if Debbie gave you that name, but Chuck Chambers.
I don't think so.
Someone you'd want to talk to you.
And,
he was either Luann's son or... Their son, I don't know which.
Maybe if you could help her remember that, because
Sure.
Yeah, and then the Spurks, Todd Spurks' name comes up quite a bit.
Oh, goodness,
They were older.
Yeah.
Buddy Spurk, who passed away, his kids played. His youngest son is my son's age, but he had a couple of kids older, so he coaxed on up. But there would be some good ones to talk to.
Now, I'll call Debbie and ask her to see if she can get contacts for Chuck Chambers, because she's connected with that side of their family a little bit, and that would be a good one for your information on John and Luann.
Yeah, they shouldn't, when they incorporated what they did up there at the park, Lee McKeegan now, that placard that's there, I don't know if his name is on there, but his name certainly needs to be on there, and there needs to be a special place for him for all that he did.
It might be. I'm not sure.
And it could very well be. Yeah. I'll go up there and look and see. But
sure.
The guys like that or people like that in the community need to be remembered. They should never be forgotten. And kids need to know about that too.
Oh,
somebody came before them and made all this possible for them.
Most of the kids knew John. John made them remember. Everybody
I'm talking knew. About today.
Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And somehow his charisma or whatever he had that's what drew the sponsors to be one a part of it,
mm-hmm.
because it was successful. It's like, I want my name on a t-shirt out there because that thing, that is a neat program. People are going to see my name.
Mm-hmm.
That's big. And so that just drew the sponsors. We really didn't ever have any trouble with sponsors. We had a sponsor banquet every year.
Oh, gosh,
it was
that's
huge.
Wonderful.
And we'd have hundreds of people. It was out at, held at John Knox. And we'd honor the sponsors and thank them and provide them this wonderful dinner. And they got pictures, of course, like you've seen, of all mm-hmm. the kids. And like you say, hanging on the wall. But he made it so professional and successful that everybody wanted to be a part of it. It wasn't
mm-hmm.
like, oh, no, that's kind of a, you know, seesaw thing. No, this was big time for them. So it was kind of...
There wasn't much else in town at the time.
Hmm?
There wasn't much else in town to do at the time.
That's true.
Yeah, that's way little.
Now they get sponsored from everybody.
You know, and the kids weren't hung up on other stuff.
Now didn't have a cell phone.
Now sports they can be a part of, not to mention electronics, but still even other sports. Mm-hmm. That.
Well, another thing, too, is the philosophy that you all had back then. Nowadays, kids that are in sports, like in high school, they go to camp, and
oh.
it costs money. They have training facilities within the school. They do all these things.
Everybody's going to be a professional.
Exactly,
yeah.
And it costs money, and a lot of these families can't afford that. So kids probably feel somewhat left out in a way. And then I know that there, besides... Lee Summit Baseball Association, they're competitive teams too, right? That
mm-hmm.
or is that's different. And so then you've got that. So I mean, I just
that's why it was so cool the way they did it.
Mm-hmm.
The way they did it. Every kid that came out there and he couldn't throw the ball very far. That's okay. He wanted to be there and he was on the team.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he might not do so good, but maybe next year
he'd
do better.
Yeah.
And he might turn out to be a really great player later on. There were two young men that I remember that had some interest from professional teams. Jason somebody. Oh,
yeah.
Darn, I wish we could think of their name so you could have
Seavers? Them. Was it Seavers? I'm not sure.
And some of them had scholarships to some colleges for baseball. Steve Parker was one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so some of them developed some pretty darn good skills,
mm-hmm.
but they might not have otherwise had a chance
well,
to.
Well, sure.
Do.
And then as they got into high school, that certainly would help that baseball
oh,
coach
yeah.
to have experienced
sure.
kids. I mean,
sure.
that's, yeah, that's like the beginning of the family down here in T-ball, and then you go on up and you're in high school,
yeah.
and maybe you're not going to the majors, but, you know, maybe you got a nice little high school baseball team.
Sure. Just have different things flashing through my mind about the concession stand. But one is not really the concession stand, but we used it to give out candy. They sold candy bars for fun.
Oh, World's Finest Chocolate. I was talking to someone about that.
It was Hershey bars, wasn't it?
Was it Hershey's?
I think it was Hershey bar. I don't know, but there was stack after stack after stack of boxes. And these kids would... Parents would come up to the window and sign out for their box, you know.
Oh,
and
sure.
They had to turn them back in.
We had
in.
More candy bars at home in the freezer. Kids couldn't sell them, we'd buy them ourselves.
Naturally.
Grandma and Grandpa would buy some.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That
so
was
candy.
Another thing. It was fun. Oh, hard work then, but it was fun.
So like when somebody would see you coming up their driveway with a box in your hand, just like you had to run out the back door.
Oh,
we did that too in high school. We sold World's Finest Chocolate. I'm not sure, I don't know whether it was supporting the Booster Club or whatever what it was doing, but we always, it was like, oh no, but we always broke into the boxes and ate one and then we had to figure out how we were going to pay for it.
Yeah.
We never had any money.
Our son played basketball for Lee Summit and we made pizzas. And we'd have a day in the gym where it was assembly line of pizzas and watching those boys put that cheese and stuff on. Yeah.
I remember when they used to sell those.
Oh, my gosh.
We came in 89, and my son graduated from Lee Summit High School in 94.
Oh.
So I remember.
It was 92 or 94. Now that you say that, maybe it was 94.
Well, his name is Zach Smith. He was,
was
a debater, Zach.
Zach.
Uh-huh.
Well, we'll have to ask our son if he knows him.
You may.
Interesting. That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a totally different time. Zach was not an athlete. I mean, I tried to get him into baseball and soccer and everything, but he didn't mind it, but he wasn't like me, wasn't crazy about it. So
yeah.
Then Robbie Little said, hey, you know, you need to be in debate. And then he got into debate, and he did all for junior high and then high school, and he did
cool.
really well. But that was his sport.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he's still good at it today. He's 45, and he lives in China, and he can still
wow.
you know, give me A, B, and C why I need to do this.
Love it. Wow.
Yeah.
Oh,
but those are, yeah. Mm. And his inspiration besides Robbie was Cheryl Bramlett. Cheryl was his debate coach, and she inspired him and those other kids too. So, she, you know, that's a debate coach too. This is a different kind of sport, but
well,
anyway,
yeah.
it's the same principle. It is
yeah.
for these kids. So, anyway, thank you very much for your time today, Ed.
You're welcome.
It's been great, and I think as we go along, we need to start planning of how we can get all these folks together for some kind of a wiener roast, or you know, just to sit around and talk about stuff and get some of the players and all that. We have to. I know some. I forget who I talked to about this. They said you really have to have a big facility, but I'm sure we can find some place that we can get.
I had thought about it in the past, and I kind of let it go. I don't know.
Yes, we'd have to have a big facility, and even could we expand it to kids that play for these?
That's what I want.
Yes,
I want the kids
yes.
and the coaches together again to
yes.
talk about everything and
yes.
lots of photo ops and more recordings if we can get it, maybe a video, you know, somebody could do video. Just,
sure.
I think it'd be really, really important. And there's a lot of these coaches that are in their 80s now, and that's mm-hmm. another thing that I just feel like I'm compelled to really get out there mm-hmm. and get these stories
sure.
Before
you
know, something.
I have some old tapes, VHS tapes of baseball games.
Oh, you do?
And it's like watching paint dry. It's just,
yeah.
But it's so interesting to watch. I need to dig those out, maybe put them on a CD, just bits and pieces. Or
Summit
something.
Video in downtown yeah. Lee Summit can do that.
Yeah.
You can do stuff with them?
Other stuff, yeah.
Yeah, they do a great job there.
They
yeah.
Put some bits and pieces of things on there.
Sure.
That'd be cool.
That'd be a wonderful project. That'd be excellent.
Okay.
Okay. Well, thank you very much again, and I really appreciate it. I'm sure I'll be getting back with you.
All right. I'll, if you're interested in these pictures, I'll make you copies and